Judy was boring.
Hello.
Then Judy discovered Chumbacasino.com.
It's my little escape.
Now Judy's the life of the party.
Oh, baby, mama's bringing home the bacon.
Whoa, take it easy, Judy. The Chumba life is for everybody. So go to Chumbacasino.com and play over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Hello, and welcome to Pulse of the Region, brought to you by the Metro Hartford Alliance. The Metro Hartford Alliance is an investor-based economic development partnership focused on business development and growth, retaining and attracting jobs and talent, and promoting all the great things in our Hartford region. You can learn more about our mission and how to get involved at metrohartford.com. Thank you so much for joining us today. I'm your host, Kate Bauman, and thank you to our sponsor, Oak Hill. Oak Hill believes that people with disabilities have the right and capability to be contributing, productive members of their communities. Building from that belief, they established a full-service organization to care for, educate, and advocate for disabled people, their families, and their communities. You can learn more at oakhillct.org. Today, we have a great and what I'm hoping will be very informative show for you. We are talking about how and when Connecticut will be voting this year in the upcoming elections. Joining us later on in the show today will be chair of the SAMCT Task Force, Oz Griebel. And to kick things off, we are extremely lucky to have Secretary of the State, Denise Merrill, here with us. Secretary Merrill, thank you so much for joining us.
Oh, my pleasure. Nice to be here.
That's fantastic, and it's certainly a very busy week for you, so appreciate you taking the time, and certainly I'm probably not envious of your schedule at all this week.
Yes, there's a lot going on in elections.
Yes, definitely. So, and that's where, you know, to start things off, obviously a big announcement from the governor, you know, stating because of everything with the COVID-19 pandemic, he signed an executive order allowing all registered voters throughout the state to vote absentee in the August primaries. Can you give a little bit of overview on this and then talk about really, you know, what you're doing, in order to really execute this?
Sure. So the governor did issue an executive order yesterday, which basically supplements the opinion that I came out with about a week ago, trying to interpret Connecticut's statutes and state constitution on this whole issue of who can get an absentee ballot and when. And this is testing the limits, I think, of our current structure, because Connecticut has the most restrictive absentee ballot rules in the country.
Okay.
And because it's in our state constitution, the exact situations in which a voter can get an absentee ballot makes it very, very difficult to have any flexibility when it comes to something like our current situation, which is unprecedented. And, of course, the constitutional restriction, which says you can get an absentee ballot if you're unable to get to the polls due to illness, has not only never been tested, but it's also directly in conflict with the governor's orders that people, particularly over the age of 65, should stay home or at least stay away from large crowds. This is really testing our ability to be able to not make people make this terrible choice between their health and their vote, because I've gotten so much mail and communications from voters who are scared to go to the polls because, you know, it's a place they're going to have to encounter other people and perhaps contract the COVID virus. So it's been a real challenge. I'm glad the governor came out with his executive order, and I think he did it for exactly the right reason.
No, it's so true. And not only voters, but then also, you know, everyone who's helping and volunteering those days. I think, you know, certainly there's a lot of retirees who help volunteer there. So certainly, you know, an at-risk population that don't want to have, you know, them to put them in at risk at all, too.
Oh, exactly. I mean, I think one of the greatest challenges that we're going to have, even for this coming primary, where, of course, you don't get the kind of turnout you do in the general election in the fall, but our primary is August 11th, and we've already heard from the local registrars and clerks that they're going to have trouble, great deal of trouble finding people who want to work at the polls that day, even though we do have a very extensive plan to try to manage all this, but it won't be easy.
Right. Oh, no, definitely not. Again, going back to your busy schedule. And can you talk a little bit about just how are people going to be able to send in their ballot? Can you talk about that process?
Yeah, sure. It's nothing really changes, honestly. We've been doing absentee ballots like the rest of the country for many, many years. It's just that we're expecting there'll be a larger volume because even under normal circumstances, whether we did anything or not, I'm just expecting a lot more people are going to want to vote absentee. So it's the same as it always is in the sense that you get an application. The difference is this year we're going to facilitate it a little bit because we're going to mail that application to people ahead of time, well ahead of time, because one problem is people tend to wait to the last minute and then it's possible their ballot wouldn't get counted. So we'll mail the application to people, but then they have to fill it out, indicate the reason they're getting an absentee ballot, and then they mail it into their town, which is what always happens. And then the town clerk will check them off the list and send them their ballot. And you have to then fill out the ballot, put it in a separate envelope. There's two envelopes involved. This is always the case with absentee ballots, the way we do it all the time. And then you mail it back, and then they count the ballot on election day. So you can get it back anytime before and even on election day, and it will still be counted. So nothing has changed except the fact that we are mailing the applications to people with a return stamp self-addressed envelope to facilitate that. And we're doing that with federal funding that was, made available to all the states to facilitate vote by mail for exactly the same reason, because all across the country, people are frantic about their ability to vote and to be able to vote from home. You know, as you probably know, there are many states now, about 7 or 8 or 9, that do all vote by mail. But they've developed that over many years. And it takes quite a lot of more personnel and process than we have right now to be able to do something like that.
Okay. And how are you addressing, you know, obviously with mail-in voting, there's some people, you know, concerned about the risks with that. You know, what's really been your response to people in regards to that?
Yeah, I mean, it's the same thing that, I mean, we're not doing anything differently, so it kind of surprises me that people are at all concerned about, they're saying there might be people, I don't know, not being the people who they say they are. I'm not even sure what the objection is, but I think it's what I would say is we're not doing anything differently than we always do. We are doing one more thing. That is, we will have a locked ballot box where you can drop your signed, filled-out ballot in the box because a lot of the town halls are closed. So we had to come up with a way that people could drop off their ballots in these boxes without encountering anybody or touching anything that might be contaminated. So that's, I guess, now become an issue. People are concerned that the voting lists aren't accurate, and so maybe somehow that mailing applications to all the people on the list somehow would be a problem, but they're just the applications. See, we have to keep saying that to people. It is not the ballots themselves that we're mailing out. We're mailing applications, and people always get the applications either on our website or from their town hall. So as far as the lists being accurate, our voter list is as accurate and more so than it ever has been. The list is maintained at the local level. See, in Connecticut, we don't even have county level of government. So the elections are administered locally, not by my office. We keep the server, but the lists are maintained by local registrars. There's one from each party of the two major parties. And they take the names off, put them on according to very strict federal and state law.
And now, what's the timeline in, you know, that people could look to be receiving these applications?
Hopefully, we'll be mailing them out the first week of June. As I said, I just want to make ample time for people to be able to get them and get them back and get them counted, especially since this year It will be a the big challenge this year is being able to manage a lot more ballots. Traditionally, Connecticut only gets about 5 to 8% of people, depending on the election, vote absentee normally. So if we had a huge increase in that, it would be very difficult for the towns to be able to process everything. So if we can get those applications out there, people will still have time. There's a lot of mailing back and forth. You can hear it. It's a very full of checks and balances, I guess we like to say. But
yeah,
the application has to get... Yeah, which is a good thing. But in this case, you know, ironically, it just makes it much more difficult to process if there are a great deal more. And, you know, it's still unclear if that's even going to happen. I think the wake-up call for a lot of us was Milwaukee, and I'm sure a lot of people saw on television the people standing in line at the polls, and it looks like 50 or 60 people actually contracted COVID standing in line to vote. And that's because their absentee ballots either never arrived or they changed their minds and all showed up at the polls. We don't really know. So there's the great challenge, is to figure out how many people are going to show up at the polling place and how many people are going to actually vote absentee.
Right. And when would you recommend, you know, primaries are on the August 11th, as you said. So as people, you know, receive their applications, filling those out as quickly as possible. And then when is, you know, really would you recommend people sending in their ballots, is, you know, hopefully as soon as they receive them, but is there a drop dead date on when they do need to mail those?
Well, they need to be in hand at the town hall by election day. So if you don't deliver it by hand, either, you know, in the ballot box or at town hall personally, you're taking a chance that it won't get there, because the mail service, you know, is now in question too, because if they have a big influx of mail on election day, that's a problem for them. So I would recommend actually dropping it off. Or if you mail it, you need to mail it. I would mail it at least a week in advance, particularly in parts of the state where you're close to New York, because a lot of times the mail gets sent to New York first and then back to Connecticut. So you're taking a chance. It has to be actually in hand by election day.
Okay. Good advice. And do you think that this, you know, obviously kind of now working off of a system that's been in place for a while, but certainly enhancing it this year just due to, you know, the anticipated volume, do you think that in the future, this will even kind of change, you know, our elections, you know, moving hopefully, you know, past COVID-19 into years to come?
I suspect it will create some sort of expectation in the public that they would have the convenience of doing this in the future. You know, now it's very public that many states are doing a lot of this. I'm not somebody who thinks it's a great idea that everybody start voting by mail. I think it's got its own share of problems. There's no simple solution here. Just as people were talking about voting on the internet, voting electronically, and for the same reason, there are a lot of security risks with that. So I think it will create an expectation in the public, though, that this is going to become available, and we're just going to have to respond to that despite our state constitutional provision. But of course, in Connecticut, we can't do anything until the legislature addresses the constitutional amendment question, because we would have to amend the Constitution to enable more people to use absentee ballots.
Okay. No, it definitely makes sense. I have to be honest, I do always love getting the I voted today sticker. So I'm disappointed that maybe that's the one piece I am going to miss out on.
I know. I mean, it really is. It's horrible. It's just one more fallout from this terrible virus. But I have to say, I'm over 65, and I guess I'm going to plan to vote absentee, just better safe than sorry. But it's just such a change for us here in Connecticut. It's kind of sad.
Mm-hmm. No, definitely. But, you know, fantastic. And, you know, thank you to all the work you're doing and your team to, again, making sure that everyone, I think I read a quote you said yesterday, you shouldn't have to choose between your health and, you know, voting. So it's fantastic that you're putting kind of, you know, updating kind of guidelines and, you know, really just building off what we've been doing. So really appreciate all of those efforts.
Oh, thank you very much. Yeah, it's a big job. We have an extensive plan. We've got to also make sure the polling places are safe. So we're going to be buying PPE for the poll workers. There's a lot to it. So if anybody's interested in everything we're doing, it's all on our website under our Safe Polls plan. Yeah.
OK, Okay, perfect. And that's ct.gov, correct?
Right. sots.ct.gov, if you want to go right to it.
Perfect. Well, as we wrap up here is, you know, we at the Metro Hartford Alliance really are trying to look at, you know, the positive things here in our region, especially with everything going on. So if you don't mind, I might put you on the spot really quick and just would love in, you know, about 20 seconds or less is what do you love most about living here in the Hartford region?
Oh, I live in the west end of Hartford, and this is like my favorite place in the world because it's a real neighborhood. I mean, people actually know each other and walk around and help each other garden. And even now, we're sort of waving to each other in the street. We're doing, you know, little musical events on our front porches. I mean, you just don't get that kind of thing anymore anywhere else. So all the events we have around here, we've just got so much going for us. I just love it.
No, it's fantastic. And I love the kind of the positive silver lining coming from all this is I've made more friends with my neighbors than I ever have in the years I've lived at my house, which is fantastic. That family, that community. Well, thank you so much, Secretary Merrill, for joining us today. And again, for all of your hard work in putting all this together. And can you just share the website one more time on where people can go to get all the information for voting this year?
Sure. It's SOTS, as in Secretary of the State, at ct.gov. Or you can just go to My Vote CT, and you'll get to the same place.
Sounds great. Well, thank you very much. We will look forward to speaking with you again soon.
Thanks so much.
And now joining us is the chair of the SAM CT Task Force, Oz Riebel. Oz, welcome to the show.
Delighted to be with you, Kate. Thanks for the opportunity to talk.
Of course, of course. And hopefully it feels good. Good for you to be back on the show.
It does, very much so.
Fantastic. Well, to start off, Oz, would love to have you give us an overview about SAMCT.
Sure. So SAM is an organization based in New York. It's the acronym SAM stands for the Serve America Movement, and it was launched in 2000, late 16, early 17, principally by a group of lawyers and other professionals in New York, really with a goal of creating what the phrase they use is a new type. And that's the word on the word type of political party that focuses not so much on ideology or platforms, but champions candidates who are who value transparency, who value demonstrate that they value transparency, accountability, and the ability and desire to work for what they refer to as common sense solutions to issues that matter to voters, as opposed to what many of us feel we have today as kind of a red versus blue situation, where the two major parties are more focused on retaining control than they are on dealing with issues. You often say that if one party says the sky is blue, the other party, by definition, has to say it's black. And what SAM has been doing over the last 2 years, when Monty Frank and I ran in Connecticut in 2018, they were good enough to endorse us. Obviously, not many people knew who they were. They ran a ticket in New York. A woman by the name of Stephanie Miner, who had been the immediate prior mayor of Syracuse, and a gentleman by the name of Michael Volpe, who was a chief elected official of one of the Westchester County towns, they ran as a ticket in New York, a gubernatorial ticket in New York, and earned enough votes to be a so-called minor party in New York. So in New York, it actually is a party. After the 18 elections, when they approached Monty and me about the possibility of doing something similar in Connecticut, we really said that the focus in Connecticut, having our experiences, really needs to be on election reform. So SAM Connecticut, and our website is www.joinsamct.org, is focused on what we refer to as election reform initiatives that will enhance candidate competition in elections, that will enhance voter participation and genuine choice at the polls, as opposed to saying, gee, if I vote for X, I'm wasting my vote, or you as a candidate are a spoiler, and looking to reinvigorate competition among even within the parties by championing term limits. So those have been the sort of the three legs of our stool. We've been out prior to the pandemic, having information meetings at schools, at businesses, at churches, libraries, wherever people will will host us to talk about this. And then more recently, and knowing you had Secretary of the State Denise Merrill on earlier, with this pandemic, we've added sort of a fourth leg of the stool, if you will, and that's championing two things. One is supporting the Secretary's urging of the governor to expand the absentee ballot option for all voters by an executive order. He now has done that with respect to the August 11th primaries, but we're urging that to be expanded through to make sure that the absentee ballot is available for the November 3rd general elections. And then we've really specifically urged the forming of what we call a voter participation commission that would include representatives of the legislature from both parties, obviously the secretary, members of the private sector. We have a company here in Connecticut that actually provides some of the key the systems and the equipment for the states that have a robust vote by mail option, and put that commission together so that we can have put in place for the long term for all future federal and state elections that vote by mail option. So that's what we've been focused on, and particularly given your discussion with the secretary earlier, has been a primary focus for us in the last couple of weeks in terms of op-eds and interviews like this.
Okay, no, that's fantastic. Appreciate that overview. And yeah, certainly a very, busy couple of weeks in terms of, everything upcoming for the elections. And I guess, can you talk a little bit too on, obviously for the August 11th primaries is, everyone will be receiving an application soon to then submit for their ballot, which is, great news. Is there anything else you feel that, the state and, overall we can look to do even to make the voter process even easier, not only for these primaries, but then as you mentioned too, looking ahead to the general elections?
Well, there's always been a discussion of making it easier to register, and as you know, and I'm sure the secretary touched on this in her discussion with you, is the allegations or concerns, legitimate concerns about fraud and whatnot. To me, the purpose of the commission that we're recommending be established would be to get at these issues so that rather than waiting until I'm going to come back to one real serious concern I have about about even the absentee ballots, but in the looking at this over from a more of a strategic standpoint, rather than waiting for the legislature to come back into session after the November elections and the new session starting in January, let's start working now, because there will have to be some sort of legislative action, either legislatively or potentially with a constitutional amendment, to allow that vote by mail option to be implemented for the long term, not just an absentee ballot. We're one of six states. Connecticut is actually ranked by an organization called the National Vote at Home Institute, based in Denver, as one of the six worst states in the country in terms of the requirements, relatively strict requirements we have in terms of using absentee ballots. We're one of the six states that still require you to submit an application. Now, what the governor's doing for August 11th is in a de facto overriding that requirement and allowing the applications to be sent and ideally honored. I don't believe that's the case yet for November 3rd. So the notion of just getting this commission together so that you can bring private sector people with representatives of both parties, bring in people, engage other states that have used the vote by mail option, so we can really move forward and not wait for the next emergency. And we all know there's going to be anybody, if you read all the literature around the pandemic, we're all concerned about another wave, and whether it's the COVID-19 virus or it's some other issue, we don't want these issues to undermine our very sacred right, as sacred principle of voting and determining who represents them in elections. So instead of doing a reaction to the crisis, let's put a process in place that ensures that voting is going to go forward. The concern I have is when you look at I read some of the, not only the press coverage, but some of the literature by people who are involved in this. Real concerns right now that as more states are looking in this, because of the pandemic, at expanding the vote by mail option, either through the absentee ballot or otherwise, many of the vendors are concerned that they're not going to be able to provide things like just prepay postage envelopes that you need to secure the vote. So the idea of, you know, doing this sort of sequentially doesn't make sense to us, which is why we're trying to pull and advocate for pulling the November 3rd election together with the August 11th primaries, as well as looking at this long term for the vote by mail option. And for your listeners, if any, we just issued a survey this morning. Five statements on these five issues about term limits and ranked choice voting and vote by mail option. It's on the website, and we'd be delighted to get people's thoughts on these initiatives in terms of how important they think they are to really having an ever more robust democracy and an ever more of we the people deciding who represents us in elected office.
That's great, and it's something that's available on your website, correct?
Correct. It's right on the survey's right on the website. I think if you go to the homepage, it's down a little bit towards the bottom. It's pretty straightforward. It's a survey. It takes less than 60 seconds to answer the questions. And it's kind of a strongly agree, strongly disagree, and don't know. So it's pretty straightforward in that regard. And we're also encouraging people, if you think it makes sense, to forward the survey to people in your family, friends, and colleagues. As we try to really get a better sense of how important voters think these reforms are.
Okay, great. And you touched quickly on, you know, certain other states have gone to, you know, the right to vote by mail.
Right.
Anything that, you know, we've been learning from those states that we could look to apply here or, you know, are currently applying here in Connecticut?
Well, to me, the reason for the commission, Kate, is to have that robust discussion that's informed. In fact, one of the things, I may have mentioned this to you when you and I talked briefly the other day, one of the things I learned after we had an op-ed published about 2 weeks ago is that Governor Malloy in 2018, in February or March of 2018, his final year in office, actually issued an executive order requiring a study of vote-by-mail option and other related and other registration type questions. A gentleman contacted me after he read that. Actually, he's in Oregon, lives in Oregon, but is the director of research for this National Vote at Home Institute. And he called me to say, "Gee, great op-ed, but you should know that report that you think the commission needs has already been done." And what had happened in the latter part of Governor Malloy's administration is they reached out. People in the administration reached out to the National Vote at Home Institute, and they, in late September, early October of 18, actually published a comprehensive report on the vote by mail option. They took basically what they did is they took all the research they had been doing around the country and published that in a very comprehensive report with a focus on Connecticut. So, as I said, when I contacted the gentleman and thanked him for the referral and got some more background from him, I said, "Gee, if we ever get a commission formed or start with a legislature next year, this would be a jumping off place." And it gets at the fraud issues, of which there are very few. You read the literature and people who are in academia who study this, there are very few incidents of fraud in almost any voting situation, and very few in the vote by mail, which is the single biggest impediment. The concerns, obviously, the president has raised it. Others have raised it. This concern about the fraud issue. It's a serious one. The incidents appear to be de minimis, but it's an issue that needs to be resolved so that voters feel confident that when they cast their vote, it's going to be appropriately secure and counted.
Definitely. Well, thank you so much. I really appreciate that. And, you know, kind of reminding people they can go to joinsamct.org to fill out the survey to get some additional information. And I'll throw one more question to you, Oz. As you know more than anyone, is the Metro Hartford Alliance really looks to spotlight the positivity and great things happening here in our region. In about, you know, 20 to 30 seconds, could you give us just your take on why do you love the Hartford region so much?
Well, I've been here for almost 30 years. It's the state size has always appealed to me. The city size has appealed to me. And yet the diversity in the state, as small as it is, from northwestern Connecticut, northeastern Connecticut, down through Fairfield County and southeastern Connecticut, it is a great state. It's full of very intelligent, caring people. And I think this is a state that really ought to be at the head of so many of these things, whether it's in the healthcare world, whether it's in the area of financial services, or in this case, in the area area of Democratic election reform. So it's a great place to be, and I love living here and look forward to continuing to do so.
Fantastic. Oz, thank you so much for joining us today. We really appreciate it.
Real pleasure, Kate. Thanks for having me.
No problem. And before we sign off today, we would love to welcome a couple new investors to the Metro Hartford Alliance. We are very excited to have Navigator Management Partners, who's an industry-focused technology management and advisory services partner, joining our team. Additionally, Outfront Media, who's connecting brands to their target audiences as they live their lives. And last but certainly not least is Cedarship, who is a social impact dashboard that helps strengthen your brand by building deeper connections with customers through the good you do in the community. So it's fantastic to have some new partners of the Metro Hartford Alliance. We would like to say thank you again to Secretary Merrill and to Oz Griebel for joining us today. All of the information that we shared today will be located on our website, metrohartford.com, so you can go there for more information. And lastly, we'd like to thank our sponsor, Oak Hill. And certainly, thank you for joining us today. This is Pulse of the Region, brought to you by the Metro Hartford Alliance. I'm Kate Bauman, and hoping you stay positive and make today a good day. We will talk with you soon.
Lucky Land Casino, asking people, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
Lucky? In line at the deli, I guess?
Aha, in my dentist's office. More than once, actually.
Do I have to say?
Yes, you do.
In the car, before my kid's PTA meeting.
Really?
Yes.
Excuse me, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
I never win and tell.
Well, there you have it. You can get lucky anywhere, playing at LuckyLandSlots.com. Play for free right now. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.